Hello, members and friends of RAOTC and all listeners to this broadcast. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Older Timers Club of Australia, Incorporated, saying welcome to 2022. And today, being the first Monday of February, we commence our programs for this year. We trust that you have all been well and had a pleasant Christmas and New Year. It seems only yesterday that we were all caught up with those activities, doesn't it? I am Ian, VK3JS, and apart from our usual thanks to those volunteers who provide relays of this program, I hope that you will find something of interest each month and that you will join in the callbacks after each broadcast. Anyway, you know the drill. Club news. Not a huge amount of activity since we last met, but I am sorry to have to tell you that my friend and colleague Bruce, VK3UV, has not been at all well during January and is not with us today. However, he sends his best wishes, hopes that you are all well, and looks forward to joining us again later in the year. I am pleased to offer a warm welcome to two new members. Doug Rossiter, call signs VK2DCR and VK2EY, with previous call signs VK2KIQ and VK2ZEX. Doug became new RAOTC full member number 1828 on the 8th of December 2021. And to Ron Birchall, VK4JE, previous call signs VK2NEQ, VK2KBG, and VK4KBG, who became new RAOTC full member number 1829 on the 14th of January 2022. Welcome, gentlemen, and we hope that you will enjoy your time in RAOTC. Also, it is with great sadness that I report the death of Bob Duckworth, VK3AIC, RAOTC member number 1245, who became a silent key on the 10th of January 2022. Here in Melbourne, Bob was a very well-known 160 metres operator and occasionally helped with relaying these monthly broadcasts on that band. Amateur radio and the RAOTC have lost a valuable friend, so let us pause a moment in memory of our departed club member. Thank you. You are listening to VK3OTN with the first of our monthly old-timers broadcasts for 2022. Regular listeners will know that between us, Bruce and I tried to bring you a balance of older and newer articles. Now, it's not that I don't have plenty of material, but remembering that RAOTC is an historically related club, we are going to stick with historical articles for a few months. You will remember that Bruce had two excellent series last year on the development of facets of radio and communication. To start this year, we return to an article from Clive Wallace, VK6CSW, and here is Clive himself.
Henry Joseph Round, unrecognised electronics pioneer. Nearly 50 years ago, on the 31st of May 1916, the Battle of Jutland was fought. This encounter has passed into the history books, not only because of its profound influence on the outcome of the Great War, but also on account of its epic scale and ferocity. But Jutland is historic in another respect, for it was the first sea battle in which the use of electronics played a dominant part. If there had been no electronics, there would have been no Battle of Jutland. The secret of how this came about was closely guarded until the end of the war. Then, in 1920, Admiral Sir Henry Jackson, who had been first Sea Lord in 1916, disclosed that the man primarily responsible for bringing the event to pass was a certain Captain H.J. Round. It happened in this manner. For the first 2 years of the war, the British Navy had failed to bring the German fleet to decisive battle because of a lag in communications. The Germans had made brief forays into the North Sea, but always by the time the Admiralty had learned about one of these and the Grand Fleet had put out to intercept, the enemy was again snug in harbour. But, unknown to the Germans, a network of sensitive direction-finding stations had been erected at various sites in the British Isles, and these were not only proving their value in tracking Zeppelin raids and submarine movements, but also for establishing the positions of German surface warships by taking bearings on their wireless telegraphy transmissions. At that time, the German Navy, when in home waters, used low-power transmission freely, confident that the signals could not be picked up in Britain. But thanks to Round's development of amplifiers of unprecedented sensitivity, this was a false premise. Then, on the 30th of May 1916, the DF stations reported that a German warship lying at Wilhelmshaven, 300 miles away, was unusually prolific with her wireless signals. That same afternoon it was further noted by the stations that the vessel had left Wilhelmshaven and was now lying in the River Yarda, about 7 miles away from her original station, shown by a change in bearing of less than 1.5 degree. The Admiralty reasoned from this information that she was about to put to sea and that the incessant chatter of her wireless telegraphy had constituted sailing orders to other warships. It was the opportunity the naval authorities had been looking for, the chance to get into a favourable position in time to strike. The Grand Fleet was ordered to put to sea with all haste and make for the German Bight, and on the following day the German Navy was brought to battle. Electronics had made this possible. The direction-finding equipment, which used soft sea valves and a modified Bellini-Tosi directional system, had been developed by H.J. Round of the Marconi Company at Broomfield, Chelmsford, just before the war. It was not long before Round's work came to the notice of the War Office, and on the outbreak of hostilities he was seconded to intelligence and ordered to provide an initial 2 stations for service in France. This was speedily done, and, following the success of these, a network covering the entire Western Front evolved. Further stations in Britain were also commissioned, Round being recalled from France to be responsible for these. Naval vessels were also fitted with DF equipment. One of Round's inventions, in connection with its use on ships, was a quadrantal error-correcting device. But these are only wartime incidents in a career studied with no fewer than 117 patent applications, which included his British patent for the use of the thermionic valve as a generator of continuous wave oscillations, and those on the screen grid and RF pentode valves, which revolutionized receiver design in the mid-1920s. Henry Joseph Round was born on the 2nd of June 1881 at King's Winford, Staffordshire. His early education took place at Cheltenham, but later he studied at the Royal College of Science, gaining first-class honours. In 1902 he joined the Marconi Company and was sent to America, where, he recalls, his office junior was a youngster by the name of David Sarnoff, now chairman of the Radio Corporation of America and internationally famous. RCA stemmed from the American Marconi Company. His next assignment was to the Marconi Training School in Babylon, Long Island, New York, where wireless operators were trained. But Round's inventive spirit was already quickening, and whenever possible he enlivened his official duties and his spare time with investigations into some of the problems of wireless reception and transmission. At this time, 1903-104, he carried out experimental work on dust cores for tuning inductances and also conducted various transmission and reception tests over land and sea using various frequencies. He also experimented with directional frame antennas and combined these with vertical antennas to give cardioid polar diagrams. None of these extramural activities produced any positive contribution in the form of patents, but the various areas of experience were all to become useful to him later on. It's also of interest to note that the lossy effect, light produced by applying DC to certain semiconductors, which officially dates from 1923, should properly be known as the round effect, for a letter in Electrical World on the 9th of February 1907, signed by H.J. Round, gives notice of this discovery that silicon carbide could act as a generator of light when a potential was applied across it. This, of course, was the beginning of the light-emitting diode. Another subject which intrigued Round at this time was the possibility of devising a practical wireless telephone. Unfortunately, his aspirations were jeopardized because he got the sack, not because of any shortcoming, but because the American Marconi Company was now in low water financially and economy was the watchword. Round went to see Thomas Edison, the great American inventor, but Edison was unable to offer him more than $12 a week. Eventually, the young engineer found employment in the New York telephone laboratories and received permission to use nearby Marconi premises for private experimental work. There he produced an arc wireless telephone, working on it at night in a room with the temperature often below freezing point and only rats for company. The signal radiation from the equipment was satisfactory, but the quality was very poor. Shortly afterwards, the Marconi Company found itself in a position to reinstate him, and Round was sent back to England. Here he continued his wireless telephony experiments and demonstrated the apparatus to Marconi over a distance of 5 miles. He became a personal assistant to Marconi, and this involved him in a great diversity of experimental and practical work. One equipment which he developed at this time, 1908, was a very useful commercial wave meter. 1910-11 found him at the Clifton Transmitting Station in Ireland, the high power station which formed the European terminal of the transatlantic wireless circuit, investigating a mysterious loss of transmitting power. Round discovered that the transmission was taking place on two discrete wavelengths. He redesigned the circuits, lengthened the wavelength, and restored the service with much improved power. During this period, he also spent considerable time investigating the possibility of reducing the effect of natural static interference and patented a balanced crystal circuit for this purpose. Further assignments took him with Marconi to Canada, Italy, and South America. On the South American trip, he received signals from Clifton at a range of 4,000 miles in daylight and 6,000 miles after dark. In 1912, Round was delegated to carry out a hazardous job in South America. The Marconi Company had installed two stations for the Madeira to Mamor Railway in Brazil, one at Manaus and the other at Porto Velho, both on the upper reaches of the Amazon. The presence of an unprecedented degree of static interference and heavy signal attenuation over the jungle path had made the company unable to meet its contract guarantee of a traffic rate of 5,000 words per day. The solution was doubly serious, as Marconi was in the throes of another financial crisis and could not afford to lose the contract money. Furthermore, other large-scale business depended on the successful operation of the railway circuit. Round was in charge of the team sent out to investigate, having been given a free hand to do whatever was necessary. This was where his early experimental work on transmission by day and night on various frequencies was to stand him in good stead, for it must be remembered that in those days the effect of wavelength on day and night ranges, in other words the behaviour of the ionosphere, was not widely known, much less understood. Round's first act was to substitute night working for daylight, a procedure which was so successful that a month's arrears of traffic were cleared in one night. From this, he realised that the wavelength being used, 2,000 metres, was too short for effective daylight operation over the path, and accordingly rewound the inductances and adjusted the antennas at both stations for use on longer wavelengths. This done, it was found that signals were readable in daylight between the hours of 6 a.m. and noon, using only 5 kilowatts, but that any attempt to raise the power to the full 50 kilowatts resulted in breakdown of the Leyden jar capacitors. This was near disaster, situated as they were, thousands of miles up the Amazon, in the middle of a jungle, with no suitable spares to hand. Round was not beaten. He organised a team of 30 Brazilians, and under his direction they removed the capacitor elements one by one, keeping the service going. The tinfoil was cleaned with boiling oil, and then built up around the edges with copper mosquito netting, the only suitable material available. The operation, first carried out at Porto Velho, took a month to complete, after which the installation at Manaus was given similar treatment. The outcome was completely successful, now operating on 2,000 metres by night and 4,000 metres by day. The station worked admirably at 50 kilowatts, with continuous communication over the densely forested path. The contract guarantees were more than covered, and the customer highly appreciative. This is believed to be the first time that deliberate use was made of different wavelengths for day and night communication. By this time, 1912, Round had proved himself as an engineer of resource and unusual ability, but so far with only 5 patents to his credit. The main flower of his inventive genius, including his tremendous contribution to valve technology, was yet to come.
You are listening to VK3OTN with the first of our news and information bulletins for 2022. Now, continuing with Clive's article.
This is the second part of the story of Henry Round, entitled Into the Era of Broadcasting. Probably the most significant single event in the history of radio communication was the discovery that the thermionic triode valve could act as a generator of continuous radio waves, and could, therefore, provide, amongst other things, a carrier wave for telephony. This forward stride was made in 1913-14. It may seem remarkable, in view of the fact that the De Forest triode valve had already been in existence for 5 or 6 years, that the discovery of its oscillatory properties had not been made by accident, that is, brought about by unintentional feedback. The triodes of those days were, however, woefully inefficient and little more than laboratory curiosities. H.J. Round, after the Amazon incident referred to in the previous issue, returned to England to become deeply immersed in problems of valve amplification, during which period he experimented with various forms of grids in valves that he had had specially made. At that time, Charles Samuel Franklin, another eminent engineer of the Marconi Company, returned from Germany with samples of the Leben-Reitz soft vacuum valve, with the information that another German, Alexander Meissner, had claimed that such valves could be made to generate oscillations. This was news indeed, for the possibility had occurred to both Round and Franklin. Meissner took out a German patent to this effect on the 9th of April, 1913, but the apparatus he'd used in his experiments was inefficient. The Leben-Reitz valve was a soft valve using ions rather than electrons to provide the conducting path between cathode and anode, and had a cathode of lime-coated platinum. This type of cathode is said to have lasted only a few minutes in Meissner's circuit and the power output to have been small. Nevertheless, he achieved radio telephony over a distance of 36 kilometres with this apparatus. Round and Franklin both continued their individual researches, while, unknown to anyone, Edwin Armstrong in the United States was also working on the same problem. In the event, all filed patents for regenerative oscillations almost simultaneously. Meissner was first in April 1913, C.S. Franklin a close second in June of that year, Armstrong third in October 1913, and Round fourth in May 1914. However, this situation needs some qualification. Armstrong's patent related to regeneration as a means of improving receiver signal strength, although the wording of his application makes it clear that he knew of the valve's property of oscillation. Round, who on paper was a year behind Meissner, developed a much more efficient valve and circuit and had given a demonstration of valve radio telephony between Marconi House and the Savoy Hotel, London, in 1913. Round's work was consolidated in the early months of 1914 when he and Marconi carried out radio telephone tests between several Italian warships off the coast of Sicily. Excellent performances were obtained between ships at anchor and on the high seas, with ranges of up to 44 miles. A valve, which Round had patented in 1913, used an oxide-coated filament surrounded by a thimble-shaped nickel grid and a cylindrical nickel anode. This type of anode became extensively used. Other patents taken out by him in 1913-1914 include that for an indirectly heated cathode, an auto-heterodyne circuit, later used as the self-oscillating mixer in superhets, and a comprehensive transmission patent, which included the first use of automatic grid bias. With the onset of the Great War in 1914, Round redoubled his activities. Several receivers were put into commission for interception purposes. The first valve direction finder was put into operation at Bromfield in Chelmsford, and other important developments relating to valve circuits were carried out there. The valves used were of the soft type, tricky to operate, but capable of a very useful degree of amplification. Round's war work on direction finding has already been mentioned in the previous article, but in addition to this, he and Major Prince, another distinguished Marconi engineer, were responsible for the design of the first aircraft telephony transmitters and receivers in 1916. Round designed the first aircraft radio valves around which the Mark I airborne transmitters and receivers were produced. For his services, Captain Round, as he now was awarded the Military Cross. By the end of the war, the art of wireless telephony had developed enormously from its crude beginnings in 1914. Once more back in civilian life with the Marconi Company, both Round and Franklin continued their researches, each with different ends in view. Round was mainly concerned with valve improvements and the investigation of their possibilities in general communications. Franklin was using valved transmitters for the shortwave experiments, which culminated in the development of the Empire Beam wireless system. In 1919, Round developed the MT1 and MT2 transmitting valves and constructed prototypes of transmitters up to 20 kilowatts in power. In March of that year, he directed the installation of a wireless telephone transmitter at Ballybunion, Ireland. This station, operating on 3,800 metres, was the first European telephony station to be heard on the other side of the Atlantic. This was followed later in the year by experimental work at Rittle, near Chelmsford, Essex, first with a 6-kilowatt transmitter and, in 1920, with one of 14 kilowatts. These carried out a series of range tests upon which amateur wireless enthusiasts were invited to report, which they did from all over the British Isles and the continent. The tests, which often consisted of a recital of railway station names, sometimes had musical items interspersed amongst them to relieve the monotony. This innovation brought shoals of appreciative reports, which were the original impetus for the establishment of an entertainment broadcast service. Some listeners may possibly recall the wireless telephony news service, which was inaugurated from Rittle on February the 23rd, 1920, on a wavelength of 2,500 metres. The broadcast by Dame Nellie Melba on the 15th of June 1920, and 2 years later, the experimental concerts from 2 Emma Talk Rittle, which led to the establishment of the original 2LO at Marconi House in the Strand in London. The 2LO transmitter was designed by Captain Round. 2LO was the first station to be taken over by the BBC after its formation in 1922. During the period of hectic activity which followed, Round, regarded as the father of entertainment broadcasting in the United Kingdom, carried out a great deal of research connected with this new field. The artificial echo system and the Sykes Round moving coil microphone are but two of Round's many contributions to the early stages of broadcasting. In parallel with all this work, Round was also carrying out another huge project. This was the redesign of the Marconi high-power stations in Carnarvon, Wales, from spark to valve transmission. The Carnarvon station was equipped with a power panel consisting of 56 MT2 valves with a high-tension supply of 10,000 volts DC. On November 19, 1921, using this new equipment, signals from this station were received in Australia. One of the many problems which beset designers at that time was that of obtaining a reasonable amount of RF amplification from the triode valve. In practice, this resolved itself into finding ways and means of minimizing the instability due to internal capacitance between grid and anode, which caused positive feedback and self-oscillation at a frequency close to the operating frequency. Round, in 1913, was probably the first to tackle this, providing an external neutralizing circuit, but this method, later adopted by others, left much to be desired. His Q valve of 1916 attacked the problem at source by enclosing the electrodes in a glass tube closely fitting around the anode, and by bringing out the grid and anode connections on opposite sides of the tube. His V24 valve in 1919 was a further step in the same direction, having the grid and anode closer to the filament. Around these two types of valve, the Marconi 55 receiver was designed. This embodied 6 V24s as RF amplifiers and a Q valve as a detector. The tuning was by iron dust cores, and here again Round's early experiments were bearing fruit. In the following year, he evolved the FEI valve, which incorporated a shield between grid and anode to reduce the inter-electrode capacity still further. Other work intervened, and it wasn't until 1925 that he was again able to give serious thought to the matter. In 1927, Round's new screen grid valve was introduced as the forerunner of a series which revolutionized receiver design with an unprecedented degree of signal amplification per stage. He followed this patent, taken out in 1926, with another in the following year for the RF pentode. His book, The Shielded Four-Electrode Valve, was published in 1927. Going back in time to 1920, Round, in addition to all his other activities, had designed valve receivers for ships and had constructed the first batch of maritime valved transmitters. In 1921, the Marconi Research Group was formed from various discrete research units and Round was appointed as its first chief. At approximately the same time, Franklin became chief of independent research. Round's output in the 1920s was truly astonishing. He designed the straight 8 receiver, he produced an electric gramophone recording system, and designed a large audience public address system, which was used in 1924 to relay King George V's speech at the first Wembley exhibition. Patents for improvements to valves, to loudspeakers, to gramophone pickups, to portable receivers, to amplifiers, to microphones, to sound recording systems, to antennas, all these and more were filed by Round. He also anticipated the cinema boom brought about by the advent of the talking picture. In 1930, when gramophone discs mechanically synchronized to the film were the order of the day, we find a Round patent, the forerunner of many such, for recording sound on film. In 1931, he resigned from the Marconi Company to set up in private practice as a research consultant. He continued to be closely associated with the company, however, and returned in 1937 in an advisory capacity for work on echo sounding. Shortly after the outbreak of World War II, he worked for the Admiralty on ASDIC, the Anti-Submarine Detection Investigation Committee, now usually known as SONAR, continuing in this until 1950. There followed further work for the Marconi Organisation, during which period he invented the new magnetostrictive devices for use in the Marconi International Marine Company echo sounders. He also introduced the first permanently magnetized nickel transducers and the first belt recording for echo sounders. Other inventions continued to pour forth. His last is on record, dated in 1962. It's a sad commentary on the human sense of values that while Britain sees fit to honour pop groups and other non-entities, Round's services to science and industry have never received any British recognition whatever. Neither has any tangible recognition been conferred by the learned societies, although the prized Armstrong Medal was presented to him by the Radio Club of America in 1952. Surely we owe something to the man who, amongst other things, played so significant a part in the founding of broadcasting, direction finding, aviation electronics, and indeed, by his work on the thermionic valve, the entire industry as we have it today. Captain Henry Joseph Round, born in 1881, died on the 17th of August 1966.
Thank you, Clive, and good to hear your voice again. Normally, we would conclude with a joke, which I know some of you like and others don't. However, the broadcast has been rather long this month, so we may forego the joke until next time. Thank you to everyone who has been with us today. If you have any comments, please do not hesitate to contact us at raotc@raotc.org.au. Please join in the callback. 73 until Monday, the 7th of March 2022. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club. Cheers!